started here.
But then,
on the agenda for this afternoon. First up, we will have a presentation of the Ethical Practices Board, their annual report. Audrey Erickson is here.
Hi.
We will let you step us through this.
Okay. I'm Audrey Erickson. I'm the chair for the Ethical Practices Board for this past year. I'll start thanking you for your time on the agenda and share some highlights with our year. I appreciate your interest in our board. We started 2014 with members Kay Botchelder, Linda Gentling, Sheba Roy, Steve Thompson, and myself. Then Lynn's second term expired in April, and Dr. Joe O'Toole was appointed to that position. In April, I was re-elected as chair, Sheba was elected as vice chair, and Kay was elected as secretary. Then in October, Sheba resigned, and we ended the year with a vacancy there. And then in December, Joel O'Toole was elected vice chair to take her place. So what our monthly or so meetings consist of, Mr. Adkins brings a summary of the inquiries he's received from department heads or other employees or city officials. Most of those are just wondering if there's possibly a potential, could be perceived conflict of interest in something they do either in their work with the city, their own work, personal interests, or their volunteer work. He shares the situation with us and then explains his response and whether he thinks there's a conflict of interest. We talk about that. That input is really important for us because he kind of educates us and guides us as we go and helps in our discussion, so we really appreciate Terry's involvement. In your report, there's some examples of some of those inquiries on page 9, and then they're also included in the minutes that we have posted on our website as well. Also, part of our goal is to do the education part that we can if anybody is interested in for the employees or for the public. So we also have a brochure that kind of outlines our process and so forth that's posted on the website. The board received 3 formal complaints filed in 2014, and there's a summary of those complaints on page 8. The first one was reviewed by the board and decided that it wasn't within our scope, and we directed that person to contact HR or the city department for some other options that were available. Then another complaint was directed towards the city parks in Rochester, and so we referred that one to the city parks department. Then the third complaint we received was in October, and that was regarding a perceived conflict of interest of some city volunteer board members. And due to the complexity of that complaint, we asked to hire a private investigator to help us get all those details that we needed. After that investigator then made a very thorough report of the circumstances, she reported that the complaint was unsubstantiated. So, as a board, we reviewed all that and we dismissed the complaint. And that complainant was advised of the board's findings and then directed to other options. Another activity that we took part in this year was we got a call and we were invited to speak at the Minnesota School of Business. They had a business ethics class there. And so Steve Thompson and I attended 2 of those classes and talked, just gave us some general information about that this board exists even, most of them didn't know, kind of what the process is for, in the city of Rochester, talked about the complaint forms, how to file. That was really interesting. That was well received, and we shared some examples of some of those inquiries and so forth, and just how to kind of guide through when there's a conflict of interest or even a perceived conflict of interest. Was that's some interesting discussion. So that was most fun for us, and I think they enjoyed it too. We've been invited back again when they have the next term next fall. So I think that was a good thing for us to do. So that's kind of the highlights of our year. There's some more formal information in the report and so forth, but it was a good year, and I look forward to another year. Any questions or anything you can answer?
Questions for Audrey. I think when you have a slow year, that's indicative of things are okay.
Well, also, you know, we talk about that a little bit. Is it good that we're not hearing from anybody, or does it mean nobody knows we're here? So we kind of try to draw that line, see if we can find the line at least.
Mm-hmm.
I just really appreciate having the Ethics Commission, one of the best things this council has done in the 7 years I've been here. I can't count the number of times where I've just told people, if it bothers you that much, go file a complaint or a question with the Ethics Commission, and it usually dies there. And it's just a nice way of having somebody independent that's going to vet these issues without having politicians decide for politicians.
Mr. Ruska?
Audrey, thank you for the work that you do in the group. I think not only does it give the community a way to address concerns, but it also keeps everybody clear-minded as far as how we think. I spent a lot of time swinging over to Mr. Atkins' office and saying, Terry, what about this, and how would you handle this? And, I think it's good that we're conscientious about what our role is and what examples we set in the community. And I think that your group helps us to keep that focus. And so I appreciate, sometimes, like you say, if there's not a lot of good things coming, it's because a lot of us already maybe are thinking ahead and trying to make sure we're doing things in the right way. And your group has really, I think, solidifies that. So appreciate all you guys do.
Thank you. I'll pass that on.
Ms. Means.
I just want to thank you for your service. It's great to have this organization to review some of the concerns and let people know that they're valued and they're being heard. So thank you very much for that. You mentioned you don't know if people know about you. What have you done for outreach, or are you doing anything, or is it all internal?
We haven't done a lot. Like I said, we've I think Jody has done a lot of the work on the website and our brochure and so forth. But just try to get the word out there that if anybody wants us to come and speak with them, or we just let them know that we're here. It's about all we really do. Can't get into specific situations or anything like that, but just the general information I think is appreciated. Like I said, those classes, people were really engaged, even the younger kids, and they weren't all young. There were some variety of ages in the class, but I think it was well received.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Campion.
I was going to add that I appreciate that as a new council person, when I came on and had some questions about situations that arise in everyday life, that the city attorney is kind of giving you the feedback in a kind of not anonymous way, and it's good that you're keeping in stride with some of those situations we find ourselves in daily as we kind of go about our business, and kind of having a two-way discourse about things we find in our daily lives that maybe trip us up, and we maybe have that cognitive dissonance about, where does the line come? And it's, first of all, it's helpful to have the city attorney to bounce it off, but also good to see that it works through the system so you guys are kind of aware of the challenges that we're facing. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the update.
Thanks for your time.
I'll finally mention, of course, that Randy Staber is the founding chair of this commission.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
One more thing to
do. Yeah. There was a request earlier that we take item 3 on our agenda, which is discussion of the DMC plan approval and financing, since the majority of people are probably here for that item. Is that all right with the council that we take that item? And Mr. Widman, we'll have you, we'll get you the third item.
Okay.
All right. So, I think Mr. Newman, are you going to lead us through this?
I will. Yeah, I think the main topic today is the financing. We have the public hearing and all the other things I plan this evening. If you want to follow up, put up the, kind of go to the main slides that we have relating to the financing. It kind of starts on this page of the. I sent you a copy of the PowerPoint that we're going to use tonight to go through some of these things. So I'll just walk you through a few of these kind of informally, and then we'll take questions.
Gary, are you planning to give this same slideshow tonight?
Yeah, no, okay. It's just going to be less formal at this point.
All right.
We usually have this as a more informal meeting. I'll just take through these, hitting the second one. We have to provide $128 million. It matches $327 million in state funding. The legislation specifies it's $1 for each $2 $0.55 of state funding. The city doesn't have to provide it up front. I mean, you can wait and match the state funding annually. As it is, I think you all know that we are out front of the state. We've got $8 million from the Lyme Corporation in 2014, another potential $4 million for 2015. I think that's likely to be less than that, but and we have a few other things that we've done, I think, that also would put us out front. If the Chateau Theater at $6 million ends up being a DMC project, you'll also be out front of the state on that cost. One other issue will be whether we get TIF credit. If we do, you know, there's some costs for the Broadway Center project that we'd also have that would get us out front of the state. The maximum annual state, GSIA is General State Infrastructure Aid. What a wonderful term. And it's got an annual max of $30 million a year, which would require $11.76 million a year. We may, you know, as the plan is now shown, that may become an issue in phase three when we get there. The current plan, which is a very constrained plan, it doesn't assume any bonding in that to the paper cost, shows $3.1 million annually in the first 5 years, $7 million in the second five, and then over $10 million. It's actually $10.8 million in phase three, and then it drops down to $4.2 million in phase four. That's just one example. I don't think, you know, in reality, the numbers would turn out to be a lot different than that. And the key is really the annual budget process that will go come about by the city working with the DMCC board and the DMCEDA. I mean, that will, you know, you'll have to, we'll sit down together and work on an annual budget and an annual CIP that will come into you folks annually in September. And then you'll make your budget decisions in December that year. So that really will be the key. But I see this plan as more of an example to show you how it might go. We provide information on the various funding sources that the legislature provided the city with to address its local match. First of those I've listed there is a lodging tax increase. An increase of 1% would provide $1 million annually over 20 years. There'd be some growth in that. We haven't projected that. And that would equal, you know, at $2.55 for every $1 would provide $2.55 million annually in match of the of state funds, which is a fairly low dollar amount. I would note that the lodging tax was increased from 4% to 7% just in 2013. And that now is tied with Bloomington as the highest lodging tax in the state. So I believe Minneapolis isn't much behind that, but we certainly, you know, that dollar amount is getting up there. A food and beverage tax of 1% could provide about $2 million annually, $40 million over 20 years, more than that with growth. That would equal state matching funds annually of $5.5 million, $102 million over 20 years. I would note that the original funding plan for the Mayo Civic Center expansion was a 1% lodging tax, a 1% food and beverage tax. But that, you know, there are some segments of the community who were not real pleased with that. It wasn't generating the amount of local support that we thought we really should have for the project. As a result, though, actually the lodging industry and the RCBV came to the city and said, you know, to make this a stronger play at the state capitol, we would go along with and help support for it with you a 3% lodging tax and repeal of the food and beverage tax. And that's basically what happened. We went into the legislature in 2013 and said we'll repeal the 1% food and beverage tax and go with the 3% lodging tax. So the reason you have a 3% lodging tax these days is A, it pays for the Mayo Civic Center expansion, and B, the lodging industry itself came in and said we would support this because we believe in this project, we want it to happen in the Mayo Civic Center expansion. So, point being that to go above that at this point on the lodging tax would be difficult, I believe. Food and beverage tax, again, if you wanted to do that, I think you'd run into the same issues we ran into with the Mayo Civic Center expansion. Neither one of those come close to the funding level that we think, if you really wanted to look forward, that you would need. It also allows you to do an admissions tax there are some entertainment taxes in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I don't have an exhaustive list of those, I'm going by memory. But it really wouldn't raise a lot of revenue. It would certainly be under what you could raise with a lodging tax or a food and beverage tax. So we haven't even attempted to project a number for that. The law also provides us with authority to do TIF and tax abatement and potentially get credit for that with the approval of the DMC board. And as we've mentioned in the past, some TIF and tax abatement credit would help you address those years in which the funding stream needs to be in the level closer to $11 million rather than the early years. Parking enterprise revenues also, for example, if you use that for the Broadway Center project, we would certainly seek credit for that. That would be about $10 million coming out of that fund. So if you want to move to the next slide, Brent, the main potential sources I think that they identified in the bill, and actually one we don't think works all that well for you, but it's in there, is an extension of the current sales tax. It's a, you know, we have a 0.5% sales tax presently, and that is used to fund the $139 million in projects. That's estimated to run about 15 to 18 years. Usually we overestimate how long it's going to run. It's probably closer to 50 than 18 years. We ran a number just assuming, you know, you're paying off a lot of those projects now. A lot of them have already been approved to go out for construction. And as a result, we had Springstead run a number which showed that you'd really generate somewhere, you know, about $9 million in principal until 2034, and it bumps up to that you have $10 million in revenue after 2034. You know, so if you go that way, you'd have a very constrained approach on what money you have available for the DMCC for quite a long time. So that one really, from our perspective, doesn't provide you with a revenue source that does anything, you know, for upfront funding for quite a long time through the DMC. A second option on the sales tax increase would be, instead of extending the existing one, would be a 0.25% increase, which is allowed by law. That would bring in about $5 million in revenue starting annually in 2016. The reason we know 2016 is you have to provide 90 days notice. Department of Revenue also has to provide 60-day notice to businesses. So that whole process takes time. It also has to be at the start of a quarter. And so as a result, we think the logical date, if you're going to go that way, would be to say you're going to start with that tax as of January 1 of 2016. A $5 million revenue stream from that would equal 12.75 annually in state matching funds. So you'd have 17.75 million available. Over 20 years, you know, you'd get $255 million of state funding. That's with no real growth. I've noted there our historic growth rate on sales tax revenues is about 2.5% a year. And so your $5 million would start at that in 2016. It would grow to about $6.5 million in 2025, and it would grow to about $8 million in 2035 based on a 2.5% growth rate. So that option would provide sufficient matching funds right away for the, at least as shown in the plan, for the first 10 years. Phases 1 and 2, they show about $3.1 million in the first 5 years, and $7 million in phase 2. And if it brings in $5 million a year, you're over it the first few years, and then you're below $7 million in the second, in phase 2. In our view, this provides a good base or revenue for the DMC with some growth. It'll be, I think, pretty good to match what you need, at least on the initial basis. And I think it gets you to the $327 million state GSA funding. Brent, if you want to go to the graph, I think is next. No, the next one had a few other details, but just kind of the same information. So on this slide, this was actually Randy said, why don't you give us a graph? It probably shows it visually, and I think he's right. I think it does do a pretty good job of that. The bottom blue line actually is if is one scenario of extending the current 0.5% sales tax. It only brings in several hundred thousand a year. I mean, depending on if you want to delay some projects, which there aren't many you can delay, it might bring in a little more than that. But in any event, if you're assuming you're basically going to be paying off those 139 million projects first, you'd have a couple hundred thousand dollars to work with annually until 2034. Then it jumps up to 10 million in sales tax revenues. The 0.5% sales tax brings in $10 million a year, roughly, right now. So on that chart, the parentheses around that up, it shows it popping up to $10 million in 2034. So that's the first line. The second line is the lodging tax showing it earning $1 million a year, just flat, not projecting any growth. We would have some growth. The food and beverage tax, which Dale and I estimated in about 2012, we thought we might bring in about $2 million a year then. With growth, it also would bring in some more than that, but it still wouldn't get anywhere close to what the 0.25% sales tax rate increase would bring in, which is shown in purple, and that would bring in about $5 million a year, and we've just shown it flat. We also just added today, if we do use the historic growth rate of about 2.5% increase annually, it would jump up, as you see in kind of the, I call it, gold, I think Brent called it orange. I think it probably is orange. With that growth rate, it shows it going up to, as we've indicated in the prior slide, 6.5 million in 2025 and 8 million in 2035. And basically, that growth plus the, if you look at in the DMC plan, they show 3.1 million in phase two, which is shown in black. And then it jumps up to 7 million in phase two, 3.1 million in phase one, 7 million in phase two, 10.8 million in phase three, dropping down to 4.2 million in phase four. But with the overage you're at in phase one and phase four, and the growth shown in the orange color, the numbers pretty well equal the amount needed, but it shows it delayed to the end of phase four rather than all being available in phase three. These are all somewhat hypothetical anyway. What you're going to have to do is, as I said, sit down annually, work out what are the projects you see for the coming year and how do you pay for them. But the important thing with the 0.25% sales tax is you'll have a revenue stream of $5 million to work with. You're actually allowed to carry these taxes to 2049, whichever one you pick, to pay for the needs you have. You can do bonding with that if you choose to do so, in which case you're going to pay, you're going to have more principal available up front, you're going to pay more interest on the back end. So that, I think that pretty well describes the options that you have. From our office's perspective, we think you need a base of revenues that is more significant than you're going to get from a 1% lodging tax increase or 1% food and beverage increase, or that you're going to get from the extending the current 0.5% sales tax. So our recommendation is the 0.25% increase in the local sales tax rate, which is going to be earmarked for this.
I think we had a couple questions there. I'm back on the graph. One quick question I had is, when you talk about the 0.25%, is there an end point?
The end point, you cannot carry it any longer than 2049. But all these options are available to you through 2049.
Okay. Mr. Bilderbeck, you had a
question? Yeah, I just wanted, Dale, do you have any additional comments?
The only comment I'd make is that food and beverage tax is an untested number. I mean, we've never done a food and beverage tax, and the data that we do get from the Department of Revenue has restaurant revenues, but it does not allow us to break out or get a picture of the revenues that are from restaurants inside hotels. For some reason, they can't. That all comes in as hotel revenues, and so we don't have. So we don't really know. We're kind of guesstimating what that number is, so we don't know if it's quite that high or not. But.
Okay. Mr. Kemp, do you have a question?
This is a fantastic chart. I am happy to see it. When I was looking at it, I had a few questions. One is, We show the anticipated growth on the 0.25%, but not on the 0.5% that's already in play. Is the any growth on the 0.5% already spent? Is that already factored
no,
in the budget?
You'd have a similar growth. It wouldn't go up as fast as this lane because it's on a large amount of money. I mean, you'd see probably a rate of growth about half of what you see on the on this one. It would be 2.5% times a lower dollar amount, so you're not going to see as much growth.
I'm not sure I follow there. It's the growth that we're experiencing is on the growth of the base that's being taxed, correct?
No, we're talking the growth in the revenue stream. So it would be 2.5% growth on 1 million for the lodging tax, 2.5% growth on 2 million for the food and beverage tax. And
there
what you're showing.
Similar,
I guess what I'm trying to get is, so that gold line, 2034, shouldn't the blue line, since it's double the rate, be double that line? Shouldn't that just be the simple math?
No, the rate of increase would be the same.
You're right.
Less.
Yeah.
The slope will be lower.
I mean, the purple line was supposed to equate to the blue line in terms of just the 0.5% versus the 1%. But if you were, the purple line was the only one that they inflated. So you are correct. Any of the others would have had a similar slope in their growth.
Sure. So if I'm just going to be blunt here, the orange line in 2034 looks like it lines up with about 8 million. At the same time, the 0.5% sales tax will be generating 16 million because it's twice the tax. Okay. So what I guess I'm trying to factor in is going back in time. We've only spent that stream at $10 million, correct? So we have six. We have
no,
a line.
We've spent whatever has come in the door.
Okay, so you've already factored in the anticipated growth in that tax.
That's why Gary says when we say it's 15 to 18 years, we're probably usually always a bit conservative because of that growth rate. And so it's probably closer to 15, but we're actually bought and bond for some of those projects, which I'm about to come to you shortly. And it was bonded. To pay for a lot of these sales tax projects. We always shoot for the conservative side of that because there are up and down fluctuations historically. Gary's right, it's 2.5%, but there are years when it's been lower than the year before.
Sure.
So I never go out with a bond issue that's basically shooting that too high.
And you don't end up with any extra money. That tax is set on the basis of the principal, and the term shortens if your revenue is coming faster. It's $139.5 million in principal. And you get to that point and the tax terminates, so it's short.
I had just a second piece here on a later kind of point that you brought up that it does look like the legislation allows them to go until 2049, but isn't the first part say the proceeds of any taxes imposed under the subdivision
must be used for public infrastructure projects.
But not necessarily that they must be a part it says they must be approved by the corporation. So wouldn't it then follow that this would have to be spent on DMC? I just wonder because for the public, I think that's a distinction.
0.25% would have to be spent on
DMC. Correct. So it becomes a discussion of what is the city willing to participate in, correct? That's kind of where we're falling here.
Well, I think the discussion is which of these options do you think will fund the DMC to a sufficient extent that it will get it off to a good start and accomplish what is the concepts of what's being discussed.
Okay, all right. Mr. Wood, you know that the bill is pending in the legislature that would change that language to allow that money to be used for other DMC non-capital expenses.
Right, yep.
So a little bit in response to Mr. Campion's comment is that our rate of bonding is certainly greater than the rate of that inflation in that growth, which means if you try to project those dollars back, it's actually going to be less than what's shown on this, and you get into a real precarious state with trying to bring those dollars back. If we bond today, we're going to get, 3.5-4%,
somewhere in there. But, yeah, I mean, the problem is, when you look at that big jump in the blue over there, you try and go out and bond for that right now, and it's basically a zero-coupon bond, and you're going to discount that so much that the value of that, which you can bring to the city today or to this DMCC project today, is so discounted.
Yeah.
Because people are going to change between now and then, that you're not going to get very much upfront money for that.
The other thing, just even coming up with a chart like this is a little dangerous because it's going to be so totally different for us. From my perspective, the key is what is your revenue stream that you're going to have to work with. And if you only got, you know, for quite a long time, a very constrained revenue stream as shown in the blue line, or even in the red line or the green line, you're not going to get very much accomplished.
And what I want to say is it's always more fun to push stuff off into the future, but I don't really find that as a real responsible way to pay for these things. And when you start trying to discount future, big future numbers back, what you do is you kind of tie the hands of future councils as well, and which just leaves them in a very precarious state. So, you know, I'd certainly be more in favor of staff's recommendation. And the other thing I did too is I went back and I looked at the last 16 cities of 100,000 or greater that I've been in, and actually went on like discover.com and just found the you know, the sales tax rates that I was paying in those 16 cities. And what I found is 13 of them were greater than 8%, which even with a quarter percent is you know, we're going to be a little bit under 8%. And you know, the two of the other ones were in Delaware, where there's no sales tax at all. And you know, I just think it's different for us, but I think we have to remember is that the 8% for a city our size is not particularly unreasonable. And the state of Minnesota applies sales tax on fewer items than almost any other state in the nation, and certainly we're not putting that on the backs of necessities that people need. You know, one other thought about this too is anytime we're playing games with TIF or anything like that, we're actually backfilling that with property taxes, which means 100% of property here in Rochester is paying those taxes. With the sales tax, ballpark 60% of the funds we're paying for locally here, with 40% coming from regional or national, international visitors. So, you know, I concur with staff's assessment that in terms of local taxpayers, the 0.25% sales tax seems to be the most viable solution.
One other thing I want to make clear is that, you know, there's still going to be kind of a cash flow issue for a few years until the state money really kicks in. Mm-hmm. And so you may end up spending more up front. And when we have more time to develop what are the projects in 2016 and 2017 and 2018 and 2019, you know, I just want you to know that it may come back and you may look at that and say, and we may recommend that you actually do some bonding where, you know, so you have more revenue to cover that kind of those early years before the state funds are really fully flowing, so that you're able to do some more of these key projects a little sooner. And that'll be your call at that time, because obviously you're the body that has to approve any bonding that the city does. But I just wanted to make that point that that could very, very well happen.
All right. How many more slides did you want to go through?
We've indicated we think it's the only one of the funding sources that we think really will accomplish what, you know, getting this thing off to a good start and making this whole thing become more of a reality sooner. You might want to also go to the next steps, and that's where one of the things we really need to point out to the public is kind of what's the next things that happen. If you approve it in March, the DMCC has their hearing April 23rd, 2015 at 5:30. And if they approve it in April, the council and determines a funding source for the project, the next step really is that budget process, where I do think there's going to have to some extensive discussions between the DMC EDA, the city, and the DMCC, and, you know, bringing some information to you folks as well on what the annual budget looks like, what will be a likely CIP plan for them for 2016 and the following years. And then obviously that's something you'll review and consider along with all the other city CIP type of things in December, because that's really where you flesh out what are some of the initial public infrastructure projects.
Okay. All right, Mr. Ruska.
Just a quick question. Can you explain the $20 million that was in this original sales tax dollars for DMC? Where does that fit into this big financial picture?
Well, it's kind of your call as to whether or not you say you want to somehow reduce the 128 by some component of that or not, or whether you want to keep that funding in the reserve for some DMC projects that might not fit as into the time frame or what they're working on. So that's that's your call, and I think that's not an immediate decision, but it's just like it's the DMCC board's call on whether they're going to give you credit for TIF projects or parking funds. To the extent you do either one of those, you drop the 128, and it can even shorten the life of it. You may or may not want to do that when you see the, you know, how things all roll out. But I don't see either one of those as an immediate decision. This immediate decision to me is identify a funding source, and then we can sit down and have our financial people and working with the EDA, we can come up with a plan. I mean, right now we need to come up with a plan for primarily for 2016. I mean, for 2015, you have the, you know, the $4 million budget to work with. And then you do have the tools of using TIF and tax increment financing and tax abatement for current private development projects, so you don't have to wait on those. So, you know, the public infrastructure projects really are going to wait until 2016.
Okay, and then if you said that if this was, this would start in January 1st of 2016, did you say it was a 60, took 60 days before you get it enacted, or?
No, you have, you know, we have, if you want to approve this, you know, this month, you know, we've got, you know, basically 9 months to get it in place. There's a 90-day notice you have to provide to the Department of Revenue, and they have 60 days. They do the notification to businesses. So, you know, a little, and as I also mentioned, it has to be the start of the quarter. So at the earliest you could do this anyway would either be the third quarter of this year or the first quarter of next year. And, you know, I think our, in the past, our gut reaction is that starting things the first of the year is easier for people to understand, get their computers all ready to go, because all the businesses, you need to adjust their systems to tack on that extra 0.25. In talking to Dale about it, we just thought that was prudent to start the first of the year rather than, you could, you might be able to do it by October 1, but you know, it didn't seem that there'd be any great impacts by waiting until January 1. Dale, you have any comments on that?
No, I mean, it's just, we have done, I think it was a lodging tax or something, yeah, like that once in the middle of the year, which, you know, can be done. It just isn't, people aren't as in tune to it somehow or another. People are always looking for what laws are changing on the first of the year. But.
So, just to make sure I understand, is the 90 days and 60 days, are they contiguous? In other words, if you targeted
they
January
15th. It's up to the Department of Revenue as how fast they can do their notice.
We could, this decision.
It could be a 90-day. Depending on how, whether Department of Revenue does a coterminous to that 90 days, do they do their 60 days within that? I think last time they had some concerns whether they might need more than 90 days when
you
talk.
But we could, you could make this decision May or June and still meet your January 16 date?
We'd want to check.
I'm just trying to understand the lag time there.
Well, my question was to see if we could tie it into the budget for next year. But apparently we're talking December of 15 for the budget, and that wouldn't give you time to.
No. Because then you have to provide a minimum of 90-day notice.
Or they'd have to budget that revenues wouldn't start getting collected until possibly up to 150 days into 2016 then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Typically we've tried to start most of these beginning of the year. I think the one time we did it, Dale, was because it was like, I think it was a 6 month period. So it was a half year point.
Okay. All right. Other questions? Comments? Just to set the stage, we're talking about financing, and that's why I was asking about what our time frame is for taking action. You know, we could potentially take action on this soon, even as early as this evening, depending on how the outcome goes, or we can delay it if there's some reason to look for some additional information. Or so I'm that was kind of the purpose. That's what I had in mind for this afternoon's discussion. Yeah. Let's talk about it, okay. See where people are at, and so forth. Mr. Woodruff?
Could I make one other point? I think one of the things we should also remember is that this is, you know, still a good way for the community to build its infrastructure. I mean, for each one of these dollars that we spend, we get $2.50 for the state. I mean, that certainly is usually better than what we do with the dollars we send to the state of Minnesota. So I just want to point out that there was a lot of return to us and to the state in getting the jobs created, and actually the state's the biggest winner of anybody in this. So.
I know we have the financial obligation ahead of us, but one thing I do want to reiterate is I'm not trying to rush this.
Yeah,
I don't think any of us wants to rush to increase a tax or anything like that. So I would hope, please, people don't misunderstand what we're trying to do here. But so if there's room for discussion, so be it.
I was just curious if we wanted to go ahead today, if there was do we have a resolution available for us then, or what we need, or...
We do. We have an ordinance change.
It was in your packet.
At a rate
you don't know me very well, do you?
Okay. Oh, ye of little faith.
Yeah.
It was the one-page document. So I'm interested in comments, critique, Mr. Bilderback.
Yeah, I think they did a nice job of showing how it lays out what the dollars would be at this point, what we're going to need if we follow the plan. I think that what would be wise for us to do, I think we've looked at it. I have no problem with going ahead tonight and voting on it. I think it's important that we give our staff enough time to work with the state people and get things in place. So I'm willing to go forward tonight on this.
Same.
Well, I guess I guess I'm a little apprehensive. You know, we're doing here is talking about new taxes, and I know we have some funding that we have ahead of us, but you know, I thought Gary made a great point. He's annually we have to determine what projects for the coming year that we're going to budget for, and we've gotten through the first 2 years, I'm just concerned about creating a pile of money and then figuring out how we're going to spend it versus having projects that we feel are warranted and then creating the funds for those. So I guess I think we've created some efficiencies here lately, trying to figure out how to work closer with the EDA, and our budgets are coming in a little bit under budget, and I just think that we could try to figure out how to hold the line for a little bit here and see how it goes before this isn't needed to be done today to make this all happen. It needs to be done to make the overall project happen. So that's why I'm just a little apprehensive to just throw another tax out there at this point. I know we're authorized to do it and we can do it, but I just really want to understand what we're doing with it.
And I completely understand what Mr. Rusk is saying. I suppose there's any rebuttal would be the lag time that's involved. Any of these funding sources we use, projects are going to come along, and then if we start to finance them, then there's some lag time there. I don't know if that works out or not, Mr. Campion.
I guess I completely can sympathize with that argument, and frankly, I've gotten a lot of feedback from people about let's not generate another source of kind of endless tax, and I understand those. The one safeguard that I think we have here is the legislation specifically says that it must be for the development, it must be contained in the development plan and approved by the corporation. So there's not
the project.
It's not as if these piles of money can be used on anything. You would agree with that,
yes,
at least?
Yes.
They are, if a pile of money is generated, which I don't know if it will be, it will not be just a general pot of money for people to come and take out of. It's for DMC, it's for those ends, and frankly, that's what gives me comfort to the end of, if we are going to enable a tax now, we do have, get through this this leeway, then we can look at how to spend it.
We sometimes fool ourselves into that there's, a bunch of different pots out there, but, really we're always dealing with issues like internal financing versus bonding, and Dale just told us that, we're going to be going out with some bonds, which tells me that there's not really a pot of money sitting anywhere right now, and that, if we're going to be, I for 3 months I've been asking people, okay, if not this, how are, what's the responsible way to finance this, and nobody's come back with anything that, is, consistently better for our citizens than this option at this point. I'm still listening, but I just haven't seen it to date.
If I can, I think SAS's position is that if you're going to adopt the plan, then that plan has some significant expectations in terms of cities' involvement in this. And like Gary is showing, that it's hard to meet those kinds of expectations without some tax increase. increase in Southern Organization of Tax. And if you don't intend to fund it at that level, then modify the plan before you approve it, because we're not going to be able to meet those kinds of expectations, I think, is sort of our position.
Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Ruskin.
So I'm comfortable with the quarter cent sales tax. We've talked in general what the timeline is to get a January 1st tax in place. So I'd like a little more information, exactly what our deadline is to enact that. But again, is the quarter cent sales tax itself I'm comfortable with.
Okay. Mr. Ruska, then Ms. Means.
I guess, Dale, to your comment, what we're looking at adopting is a concept of the plan, not the plan verbatim. So I guess that does leave, in my eyes, some wiggle room and some flexibility in our eyes. So,
I think, again, even at the round table, just understanding that there's going to have to be that kind of support if we're going to get anywhere near that kind of a program in place. I mean, even the concept of bonding for it, we've got some principles we brought to the table early on, is that we wanted this to pretty much be a pay-go, because there are some issues with bonding, especially if you're trying to use the state's money, that the state won't let you come out and only bond for their revenue flow. You have to mix it with other things. So we can't spend all our money first and be done and then say, oh, now we're going to bond for the state's share. We kind of have to say we're going to mix this all together, and we know what the state's revenue flow is now, so we can actually go to bondholders and say, here's what your expectations of repaying you are. And so it's not as easy just let's go bond for the city share up front and then hope the state comes in later. You kind of have to have that in place. So.
Ms. Means?
Well, I'm in support of the staff recommendations of the 25% increase, and even though it goes
quarter percent.
Yeah, I don't support a
25%. A quarter of 1%. And that's going to take us to 2049, which seems like a long time. We'll probably get some flack about that anyway. If it does go through, but this money is going to be spent on DMC. And did I hear you say that if we invest $1, you get how much return on investment?
2.55
return on investment. Maybe that'll soften the blow a little bit.
And if it's sales tax, it's even a higher rate.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
It's higher because what Michael's saying is there's a lot of it paid by folks that aren't from Manchester. I'd use a little lower number than Michael did.
Yeah.
There is a percentage that's paid by others. So.
Well, I get all of my information from Craig David, so.
One thing
that's why I stick with
one thing about DMC that I think is so positive is that down the line, it is going to increase money coming in from taxes, and I think that's going to help us a lot as we budget in the future.
Not even the attorney can keep a straight.
All right.
There.
Well, other questions, comments? Again, depending on how the discussion goes this evening, we could potentially, if we're so inclined, take action on the ordinance that Mr. Adkins has drafted. Which I would point out, in case anyone is reading that very closely, the ordinance says that it would be enacting a 3/4% sales tax, and that's because it's inclusive of the current 0.5 cent. We would be changing it from 1/2 to 3/4. Wouldn't want people to think we're wondering what we were doing there.
75%.
I'm sorry?
No. Yeah.
All right.
Can I ask Mr. Ruskin, you mentioned that you wanted to determine what project your budget for first. I don't know that we know that right now.
That's my point. Yeah.
I would support having some discussion about prioritization from the city standpoint, because I know that I have heard the idea that we let the development community kind of figure out what parts of the plan they're willing to tackle. And I think that there's also some benefit for the city saying, these are the value projects we see. This is the things that we're going to bring our the city's assets to bear to tackle, and to tackle it that way. Because I think that there are parts of the plan that we're probably generally optimistic about as a council, and parts of the plan that we're probably not generally optimistic about. So I think that's worthwhile, and I don't know if it's today, the discussion for today, I'm sure it'll come up tonight, but you know, how the council will sit down and maybe provide some sort of support for the development community, and this is where we'd like to see you guys engaged.
Mm-hmm. One just comment on that. There, and part of that will happen, you know, I think it's really going to be a collaborative process between the DMC EDA, the DMCC board, and the city. So they have a list of, you know, their priorities were, you know, something in the heart of the city, which hopefully the Chateau might serve as a catalyst project in the heart of the city. Bioscience development and Discovery Square, which is really, you know, leadership on that, I assume, will come from Mayo and the DMC EDA. And then there's a bunch of other projects, some of which may be feasible to go ahead on, some others that you know, maybe wait a while. But they'll have to come up with a fairly reasonable list of public infrastructure type projects for next year, considering also what funding sources you have. And that will be, I think, a real collaborative process between those two boards and you guys, because you're going to have to agree on it, because it's one source of funding that's going to have to fund those.
If I may follow on that, I would say that's exactly what I would like to see. I mean, we talk about transparency at the council level, and I think one aspect of being transparent with this is being transparent with intent. Like, you know, if our intent is, frankly, you know, not to do this piece of the plan, or that this is the lowest priority component of the plan in our purview, being transparent about that, I think, will help the community understand what the intent is of the council when it comes to engaging DMC. Because frankly, it's one thing to say this is a framework, and we all know the hard part is when you take this amorphous blob of a framework and you try and put it into reality. And I think if we are transparent about what we think the priority should be, it's going to maybe grease the sleds a little bit for everyone, both the community and everyone else that needs to be engaged here.
I do think the starting point for looking at is kind of what's in the plan now, what they say it. Mm-hmm. Are there those kind of priorities that we mentioned, those in the slideshow, and then you know, look at their list of phase one projects and have a discussion of whether those are really the ones that move forward or not. Mm-hmm. And you'll weigh in certainly on what your views are on those.
Okay. Ms. Means, and then I'd like to give the mayor a chance to comment if he'd like to. Mm-hmm. Ms. Means?
Well, I did about that prioritization. You know, I believe I read that the Mayo is going to be doing some additional building, and we now have our developers are very excited about building. So I think that prioritization is really important.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, did you want to comment?
Well, I would just say, I appreciate the discussion, and I think generally I would agree with it, and see no reason why we couldn't make that decision tonight on the tax, and also the priorities that have been mentioned for the various projects. I think certainly those two things, the heart of the city and the Discovery Square, are two that seem to me that would be the priority to get started on, and whatever it is, and so how that all works between the DMCC and the EDA, I think, is you know, certainly will occur, and maybe some of that already this Thursday when we meet with the DMC. But it's exciting times. It's you know, be another story in the not only the local paper but the Tribune as well. And yesterday at the hockey game, I said, is there going to be a day goes by that Rochester isn't mentioned in the Tribune? That's good news. It's a lot of good stuff happening. So thanks for your careful consideration, because, you know, it is it's a big step, the next ones that will be coming. But thanks to the staff, you know, the well-thought-out, the pros and cons, and what kind of the necessities that to make it happen. And so again, thanks for your discussion, and sounds like maybe where the decision is going. I appreciate it.
Am I the only person that gets really excited about sewer projects? because that's what I'm holding out for.
Pretty much. I would say that would be.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard.
That's the world.
That's right. I am excited for a small
project.
All right.
Any other discussion on this item for this afternoon? It could come up again this evening. We'll see. We'll see where we want to go. All right. Let's move back then to the review of the parkway landscaping activities. And we have an attachment from the Park Department. Mr. Meeker, you're going to step us through this?
Good afternoon, yes, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I provided a memo to you folks at your request that you want to talk about parkway landscape maintenance. And in that memo, we talked about the scope of where we're working at. We talked about budgets, we talked about mission. It really is fairly simple from a standpoint of looking at this. Our mission is really to maintain gardens, shrub beds, perennial plantings, turf areas, irrigation systems throughout the city on major winter quarters, and provide daily maintenance serving high-class and clean-wild areas and coordinate management and vegetation control. It's very simplistic. Our staff does a great job and takes this mission to heart. In fact, they go well above and beyond that. They want to make sure they provide the city high-quality areas to look at and be a part of, and they want to make sure that the product out there is very aesthetically pleasing to the community. As far as the budgets go, we looked at the budget history of this particular business unit. It's been in place since 2011. And as you know, there was a lot of conversation about the implementation of that when it came about. And it started off with being Highway 52 and how we're going to fund that and all the improvements that were being made with that project out there. The landscaping activities that were going on, how we're going to maintain that. There was consternation regarding that. And in the end, the council wisely said that, you know what, we made the investment. Let's protect that investment and make sure it's maintained in a pretty fair fashion. Now, my recollection on that budget, it was requested to be about $359,000 initially on. And the council said, no, that's too much. We're going to authorize about $259,000 of that. That's fine and dandy. We went forth and started working on that project for 2011 to today. And in that memo, it shows you the various dollar amounts for each year and what we actually spent. And those dollars are what they are. What's interesting is if you look at the budgets in total, it's very simplistic as well. Those budgets provide funding sources for two staff members, contractual maintenance, which covers about half the cost of that budget, seasonal employees, supplies and landscape material. And that's basically it. There is two pieces of equipment in that business unit, which is a propagator, like an ATV, and a spray unit. Everything else that's used out there is used by park operations equipment, whether it's pickup trucks or the Bobcats or whatever. That's a different business unit that covers that cost. That's fine. It makes it efficient for our operation to share equipment back and forth. But it just shows you how skinny that business operation actually is. That same budget, by the way, as we talked about, just covers those things I just mentioned. It does not cover the cost associated with management of that. We've got a direct manager, Jeff Hoberman, who's our forestry manager. I've got myself who's involved in that in a daily operation. I've got a crew chief that's involved in that activity, again, because there's work that has to be done out there. We need a better method of coordination of that. So those things are not accounted for in that dollar amount in that business unit. So we're taking away resources from one business unit and applying it to here. That's just the reality that we've got. As you know, our scope of work has been laid out for us as time has gone on as well. And again, it's a great thing that we're doing for the community. It provides great amenities for the city, makes it very livable. And as you've seen over the past several years, we've been increasing those amenities. Whether you're looking at 2nd Street Phases 2 and 3, or Badger Hills Drive landscaping in the roundabout areas, or 6th Street Bridge coming forward here this year, or 3rd Street down by, I think it's H3, by historic 3rd, coming forward, some more landscaping out there. All these little areas, or all these bigger areas, we look at in the scope of it, add to the city and what people want to see. The mayor knows firsthand that what the city actually wants. When MnDOT turned back Highway 63, MnDOT had a certain level of maintenance they had out there, which was, I'm going to say, bare bones. I'm not lying, but the day after, we started getting calls, the mayor and I both did, about the quality of maintenance out there and wanting to make it look better, which is great. People see what we have around elsewhere and want to have that in their quarters as well. Unfortunately, that area, we know things are slowly changing. We know that public works will bring forward street projects over the next several years, 15, 20 years, whatever it might be. And there'll be landscaping made, increased made at that point in time. So it'll be a slow process in that quarter. But elsewhere around the city of Rochester, you just talked about DMC. That will also be changing how we need to operate, whether it's our budgetary units for this operation or others. Which brings us really to our challenge we've got. That really boils down to staffing levels and or funding levels. And both are in your control. And you know, people might say, well, just contract things out. About half of our cost is already contract services. And a big challenge with that lies with who's out in the private sector that actually can do the work or wants to do the work. You just can't pick low bid in some of these cases and say, here, go forth and maintain these areas. We had Highway 14 that was done with that construction project. As it turns out, that contract actually went belly up, and we had to challenge those folks with the quality of maintenance and material they left with us. We're stuck with that now and making up for that in the next several years. Over the last 4 years, we've had one contractor providing the maintenance on Highway 52. We've gone through two quote processes in that series. On one quote, we got one additional quote for a person providing a quote. The second quote, nobody quoted but that one person. So the people are really not out there providing these types of services in the scope we need to have done. So staffing levels are going to be critical as time goes on as we move forward. Overall, frankly, I'm grateful you guys are providing this long look at what Rochester should look like. The amenities out there, the landscaping, people like that, and they are actually expecting it as we move forward. With that, I'll open up for questions.
All right. Question, Mr. Roof. What would
you? One of my issues, and I don't, this might be more for Public Works, but I actually find that the work that you folks are doing is quite good compared to when the stuff is still under contract with the initial people that are doing it. They're not living up to their contractual obligations. And I mean, do we have some sort of a checkpoint where I'm thinking of the phase three right now, where we say, hey, you guys are out of compliance, you got to fix this up, and before we're willing to take it back from you. And it's not just the landscaping, it's also the hardscape, because on phase two, I know the hardscape's been beat up really bad too, and I'm not sure who's maintaining that, but it leaves us in a tough position because they have all these weeds that have gone to seed, so we've got this huge seed bank built up in some of these beds out there, and by the time the city gets hold of it, we're already behind the ball a little bit.
Right. Frankly, we're learning as we go along. I mean, these are fairly new projects, and Second Street Phase 1 went fairly well. We've got great owners in the area that also participate, Mayo being one of them. Phases 2 and 3, you're right, there's been some challenges there with the landscape material. We have gotten after them, you know, Public Works, working with their inspectors and talking to the contractors about getting there, weeding it out, and again, there's challenges there. We've gotten ahead of the game in some respects, but overall, I think the specification may need to be modified in the future to say, here's your real criteria. But those folks work real closely with those contractors, and it's a challenge in those cases. Mm-hmm. When it's a contractor and their subcontractor actually doing the work. But Richard, do you want to make a comment about the work that goes into it?
Well, I think Michael's correct. It's a learning process, and not only for us, but for the subcontractors who are doing the work. These wetland plants and stuff that are being incorporated now in some of the rain gardens and stormwater management features within the project are very delicate from the perspective that they need a lot of TLC in order to be established over the first 2 to 3 years. People who do normal lawn seeding and sodding aren't experienced in these areas, and so it's difficult right now to find qualified contractors. And in the public bid process, when a general contractor is putting together a bid and he's soliciting prices for the landscape components and includes some of these special species, they aren't necessarily looking for the highest, for the people with the most experience necessarily. To do the work, they're looking for the people who can provide the lowest cost. Mm-hmm. So it's a process we're learning, and we've talked about pulling all of the landscape out of the general contract, doing it separately, and trying to encourage specialty contractors to get involved in that.
Okay.
So we're looking at that as we go forward.
Like Richard said, it's a challenge because on 7th Street Phase 2, I think there was something in the order of 1,000 plants that had to be replaced. It could be bad weather, it could be bad plant material, it could be tough soil conditions, any number of variables that happen in here. And that goes along with how we operate maintenance too. The variables are just so grand that we've got to kind of flex and be responsive here if we're able to.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Mayor.
These are just great to see, and oftentimes I think when we do it like this, it is like art. People take it for granted, don't realize it, or they realize it, but it doesn't really impact them. I would just say one of the things, and you mentioned when we start, there's more things with DMC. Probably the biggest complaint that comes is when it looks like we didn't coordinate the effort, that there's construction and then there's the other. And I know at times you can't do them both at the same time.
And I don't want to do it at the same time in many cases, right?
But that's, at times, that's what you hear. Why didn't they do that when they had it all torn up the first time, or something? So those are something I'd just say again, to be, try and be aware of that kind of thing as best we can. And that's not only for when we're doing aesthetic things. I don't know how that'll impact us, but Representative Norton the other last Friday mentioned that is there some state law now that with some of the things with highways where the aesthetics are taken out of the construction? She said it used to be when they put up a sound barrier or something like that and wanted to make it look a little better, that you could include that in the full price of it. And now it was like, she said, do we really want just concrete walls in some of those things where you have to then do something separate or get more money? It's not in the whole project. So
they've changed. There used to be a percentage that was dedicated towards the amenity side of it.
Yes.
I'm not sure that's the location or not.
Sounded like that might change, or there's somebody wanting to change it.
The mayor touched upon one thing here, is that you may see us out in any various part of town, whether it's 2nd Street or 52 Quarter or 14, doing a bunch of work. And it could be a construction-related issue, it could be a maintenance-related issue. For example, on Highway 52 North on 19th Street last year, we had a major improvement, correction to be made on our irrigation. When it was installed, it followed the design, but as we figured out in the end, again, part of lessons learned, it was crushed by ice and water over time and blocked the irrigation, so we had to rebore a new line in there. And again, it's a pretty major work that we had to do out there. Other things that we do too, as the plant materials die, the landscape architects do their best job to say, okay, here's what we think we want out here, the look we want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. But in the end, through the amount of water out there, the dryness out there, the soil types are out there, we may need to make changes out there to reflect that soil condition or that plant material. So we're making, for example, on 2nd Street, we took out whole areas of a shrub bed or a perennial bed, replace it because that plant material is not working very well. And again, it's our staff's expertise that can do that, make sure it maintains it looks nice throughout the year. Then.
Mr. Ruska.
I guess I'd like to see us continue to put nice things in, but I think the maintenance part of it is a big key. If we put something in it, like there's a segment on 2nd Street, I think we spent $550,000 on plants and artwork and everything that mm-hmm. goes along there. And to me, that's, maybe a little bit, it puts a pretty, gets the bar high. It's like you got a lot of work to do now to maintain that. You got a sizable investment there. And then we run into that, well, if you do it here, then you should do it, all over town. Everybody that has a new development or a new area put in or new construction wants to see, the same. Why don't we get that kind of thing? So I think, what I've seen is to really, keep it basically simple and nice, but really take care of it. I'd rather put a little bit more money towards the maintenance of it. So if we get it in there and it's not maintained nice, it just looks bad for everybody. So
we'll bring you more money next this budget side.
I kind of figured you were headed that way, but it is. If we're going to invest in it, but that's what I'm saying, is let's not overly invest. Let's not make it too extravagant. Let's make it reasonable and nice looking and efficient so that it's easy for us to maintain in a proper way. And
that's been done this time. Like I said, we're learning this process. The first couple of projects we had, 52, there was areas that were not maintainable from a standpoint of the plant selection that was made. And we're converting those areas to be more sustainable for ourselves. And Public Works has brought us in earlier in the project in the design phase to say, does this work? And is there a better way to do it? Or is there some plant material that we'd like to see? And that's really helped us long-term from the maintenance side.
You kind of stepped on my touchdown there, but that's okay. I think this is great, and I'm going to echo Councilmember Ruska's sentiment here. It's certainly setting the bar high, and as I have met many neighbors in my ward, they've wondered why their neighborhood isn't as nice as 2nd Street. And I think that it sets, it's good that we're having that conversation. I'd like to see if there are some outside-the-box things we can think of, and I know that the species are incredibly important, having worked in horticulture a little bit, that it does play a significant role, but it would be, I think what we need to do is say, if this is a program we want to continue to engage, have a policy for where it's going to be enacted so that it's clear and that it's communicated to people, you know, this might not be a residential neighborhood thing. This might be a different scenario than that. And then two, you know, continue to get those best practices and work on it. It sounds like we already have that exchange going, but also making sure we can share that with other external entities that are looking to do similar projects, maybe even inside their own property and stuff like that. So it's great to hear that you're building this foundational knowledge about how to do these streetscape stuff. Just making sure that we export that as far as possible and that we make it accessible to as many people as are interested, really.
It really boils down to how much you want to stick in it, not just us, but the person that wants to do the project. So, for example, Richard in Public Works reached out to 6th Street neighborhood when the new bridge is going in, and they have a big desire to put some landscaping out there. Richard knew our challenge, our funding and our personnel. And the neighborhood out there, there's one or two parties that are very staunch landscape people. You probably know them. They were willing to step up and say, you know what, we're willing to landscape this area to provide the spaces for it and provide it at our cost and our maintenance. Great in theory. We hope it works out that way. Will it long term? I don't know, but we hope it does. For example, Main Street out south on 63 South has done a great amount of landscaping and stuff in the boulevards. That's at Third Nickel. They have a cooperative management agreement between all the different parties that wanted that development, where they pay extra money to have that taken care of.
Yeah.
So again, it can be done, not necessarily on your nickel, but it can be done elsewhere.
Where it can be done, not on our nickel, I'm even more excited.
Mr. Ruska, then Mr. Woodruff.
I guess one of the things that we've talked about in the past, and it, we can't do it, I think we run into barriers due to liability, but is the adopt a block or adopt a corridor type area where businesses can come in and volunteers can do it. It'd be really nice if we could do that, because I think there's a lot of people out there that would enjoy doing it, but I think we get into the safety and liability issues. Is that?
I think from a standpoint, my personal perspective is if you're on the side of the street itself, in the boulevard areas, great, bring it on. But when you get them in the median area, I have some reservations about that. I'm not sure if it's public works is the same concern or not, but that would be my concern.
And I always like to separate too between the some of the niceties that we're doing, and then also the the trees, which I view more as being critical infrastructure, part of preserving the asset for a longer period of time, and want us to continue to see the trees universally applied to all projects. The other thing too is I agree with the comments that we need to keep some perspective on where we are and are not doing this. I think the key thing to remember is a lot of people wonder, well, why is Second Street so nice and my neighborhood isn't? And the answer to that's real simple. Second Street pays a whole bunch of property taxes, and chances are a residential neighborhood ain't hardly paying any. And I think there has to be some perspective between the investments that we're willing to make in an area and what the revenues they're generating for the community is. I think the second thing that I'd really like to see us pursue in time, and I think Minneapolis is laying the foundation for this, is they're looking at these transportation improvement districts, but basically some funding mechanisms to improve infrastructure based on special fees or taxes associated with people or properties within a certain distance of this. And if this becomes a more viable model, I think this is an outstanding way to both fund the creation and maintenance of some of these assets in, tax-generating areas.
I think the biggest challenge that you've got out there is we want to create these things. We know we want to do that part, whether it's around the transportation side of things or elsewhere. It's your maintenance that goes along. You can find capital dollars, but it's the maintenance that, that you're needing funding for.
All right. Anyone else?
Just want to make a comment. I know you're trying to use low maintenance products.
In many cases, yeah.
And the illustration that you show on this slide with the sound wall, those ivy, they work really well, and I would think they're low maintenance. And the one that you're showing has flowers and things that would be more high maintenance, I would suspect.
Well, the perennials are fine. It's a lower maintenance activity. There is maintenance that goes along with it. It's not no maintenance. There's some lower maintenance. The annuals that you put in, the tunas, for example, the marigolds, those are pretty high maintenance, and it takes a lot of cost to put those back in. Again, that's where your major color comes from, though. You're on Second Street, you see those areas that are landscaped with perennials. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Mayor.
A question on how much do you consider, I'll say, artwork that's not plants in some of these areas? Whether it's
as far as what's the question? I'm not sure. If
well,
we're going to allow it in there, you mean?
Yeah, with, you know, whether there's, you know, not huge sculptures, but any other kind of maybe a metalwork or something that's art that would be in there.
I can't answer the question for Public Works and Streets. I think that's through their jurisdiction, what they okay. want to bring into it. And, you know, the Second Street Phase 3 was a good example of bringing art into that right-of-way area.
True.
If you look down elsewhere in the city, though, you've got the Slattery Park area is doing art in the park and doing art in the rights-of-way. To some extent, the clockwork, they do a new piece of art every year someplace
okay, right in that's
way.
True.
There's a conversation going on right now about art along trails to, you know, bring art into where people are going to and from. So it's happening, not necessarily just in right of way.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Two other quick items I had for this afternoon. First, the committee of the whole calendar that was attached to the packet, that was an older version. I sent to the council a more updated version earlier today. And I also published that updated version to the city website, so they're in sync, so you should have that.
Could we drop off the stuff that's already done? Or
is there,
you have 20 pages if you start looking at it, and the first page, I think, is already, we're past that already.
Yep, I'll start dropping stuff
off. Okay.
And then the other thing I had, and Mr. Freeze and I were talking about this last week. You'll remember we had the presentation on fog, fat, oil, and grease, and then a suggestive ordinance. And many of us will remember that we had a presentation very similar to that last year. And Mr. Freeze and I were just trying, it could be my misunderstanding, but I think we asked Public Works to come back, but was it for a more elongated discussion, or were we just asking for a revised version of the ordinance to come back? Mr. Freeze was asking for 45 minutes or so. Maybe I misunderstood. I wasn't thinking we wanted a protracted item, but I thought I'd bring it up so that we can give direction to Public Works. What is it we wanted them to come back with on that topic? Mr. Hickey?
I mean, I think covered the concepts, and we understand the problem and the issue, so I think it's the mechanics of the ordinance.
Okay. So bring the ordinance itself back. Mr. Bilderbeck?
They were talking about fee structure, and I think that's supposed to be in the ordinance itself. Wasn't
The fee structure will be by special resolution. It won't be specified in the ordinance, although it will refer to it by resolution.
And that way you can change it easily by resolution as opposed to amending the ordinance.
Perfect. But I think we were looking to see the fee structures.
Fee structure and the ordinance. So that could take a little bit of time to talk about. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure I'm on the same page. Are we okay now?
That's what I understood, but I just want to make sure
okay. I'm okay. I just didn't want to have a long discussion if it wasn't necessary. All right, anything else for this afternoon? So this evening, 7 p.m., we're over at the Mass Civic Center Ballroom.
Gary, will you put up a sign to let people, because I guess the public doesn't have it long the other day.